Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. You can support the Father's Day by becoming a member there on the YouTube channel or jesseleepeterson.locals.com. And I do appreciate it. And Hutchie's coffee. Good. Amazing coffee. jesseleepeterson.shop. jesseleepeterson.shop. Every dime you give goes back to doing the work. So thank you all for helping us to help others. I have with me Benjamin Krause. He is a veteran rights advocate, attorney, investigative journalist, and the host of Veterans Rights Podcast. We're going to tell you how to get to all of that before we leave today. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
And what is a veterans right activist?
Well, you know, I sometimes wonder what that means myself. But, you know, for me, I guess what it means is somebody that not only appreciates and loves veterans, what that means, but also somebody that fights for the advancement of the things that we need and protects, you know, fellow vets. And so for me, what that means is basically I take what happened to me as a person and then becoming an attorney, then taking those skills and fighting for veterans that don't have the same abilities or access to make sure that they don't get wronged. So that helps with like benefits if they get wrongly denied benefits. A big example of that is if a veteran wants to become a doctor or a lawyer, they want to become a leader in America, and the Department of Veterans Affairs wrongly denies their benefits for retraining, I'll fight for that person to help them gain access to paid law school, medical school, things like that. If it's disability compensation benefits, we'll help them get those benefits if they're wrongly denied. I also do a lot of research into the Department of Veterans Affairs generally, so we'll do Freedom of Information Act requests to try to find out what policies VA is following and which ones they aren't.
Oh, okay.
So we've been able to expose a lot of issues there where they're using unqualified doctors or nurses to examine veterans with traumatic brain injury as an example, or wrongly denying emergency room care for veterans that should have it covered, things like that. So it really, it covers the spectrum of what veterans run into where they're getting shorted, you know, or harmed because of whatever they're not getting from VA.
In the good old days when you go and you serve in the military and you get out, you automatically get your benefits for education, houses. They automatically helped you. What changed that is so difficult for the vets now? Why did it change and what changed?
Yeah, a big change that we're seeing, I mean, VA has always had some challenges, right? So since the 30s, it used to be called the Bureau of War Risk Insurance, which kind of says a lot about the grandfather agency that led up to what we see today as Department of Veterans Affairs. So back in the day around World War I, used to be called the Bureau of War Risk Insurance. And even today, we see the outgrowth of insurance adjudications on everyday decision making. So even though we call it the Department of Veterans Affairs and the public thinks it's kind of a benevolent agency that takes care of vets, it does that a little bit, like it takes care of a lot of veterans most of the time. But there are complicated cases like traumatic brain injury, veterans who are so severely disabled that they require caregiver services in the home. Certain things that are unique, especially with the most recent wars coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, where we had a lot of IEDs and traumatic brain injury, burn pit issues, dioxin exposure, stuff that causes a lot of real problems that are really expensive or challenging to take care of. The more complicated that system gets to take care of veterans, the more likely it seems that we get wrongly denied. Amazing. So even like with the PACT Act, you know, they created that in I believe it was 2022. And it was a great benefit. But on the one hand, it's complicated to enforce. And on the other, some people in VA say it's too expensive. So they're trying to find out ways to kind of undo it. So we're in a situation, I think, that's become hyper politicized, where veterans are more of a political engine at times than just people trying to get through every day to get the health care we need to die from not getting health care, stuff like that. I am, yes, sir.
Oh, okay. This president, the great white hope, Donald Trump, he's more, I get the impression that he's supportive of the vets. He seems to care about the vets than any other president that I'm aware of. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think that President Trump has championed a lot of different groups, not just veterans, right? So he is, from what I can tell, he looks like a person who surprisingly does advocate for people that are down and out more so than other groups.
Right.
I think veterans is one of those groups. And I think that, you know, I don't want to say that everything that his administration has done is perfect. I think sometimes he gets bad advice from people and bad policies get implemented, but that's true with any administration.
Right.
For him, you know, I'd like to think that he's, you know, taking veteran issues very seriously. I have no reason to believe that he doesn't think that, you know, what we're dealing with is extremely serious. And one example is how he's trying to get access for veterans to the community in a way that when we need healthcare and we need it now, that we're not caught in bureaucratic red tape that the prior administration jammed us up with,
right,
where it became really hard. And so I think he's working hard for vets. It's not perfect, but it never is perfect under any administration, to
Absolutely.
Say the least.
I forgot to say happy White History Month. Did you know that July is White History Month?
No, I didn't. I didn't know that.
Really? We've been celebrating. No, I had no idea. We've been celebrating. This is the ninth year, and you're not aware of it?
No, I had no idea.
Amazing. Well, happy White History Month.
Well, there you go. Learn something new every day.
Doesn't July just feels white?
I mean, it feels hot. I just came from Oklahoma, and man, I'll tell you what, I was roasting down there. Our AC went out, and I don't know, I felt really red, frankly. I was sweating like crazy. It was pretty warm for us.
But it doesn't feel white?
I don't know. I'd say for July feels like everything. You know, we have red, white, and blue. We got all kinds of different colors going on.
We have the 4th of July. It's vacation time, relax time, reflection time. It's just all white. Are you glad to hear that we celebrate white history?
Well, I think that, not to sound overly diplomatic here, but I would say, like, I don't see anything wrong with celebrating everybody's, you know, contribution to history or America, right? So whether it's, you know, Black History Month, if it's going to be called White History Month, I guess, you know, but I think that, you know, as an American, I would prefer, frankly, just to see, you know, American History Month and just talk about all the great things that all Americans
right.
have contributed, you know, red, white, blue, whatever color you are, to make our country amazing. And so from my perspective, I'd rather just see America history and have that be the thing, you know?
But have you noticed that they celebrate every history but white history? They celebrate Black history, mama history, woman history, Allahu Abba history, Mexican history, all kind of history, everything but white history. Isn't that kind of odd, since white American founded it and created the greatest country on the planet? Wouldn't you think that they would be happy, and if they're going to celebrate all these different history months, wouldn't you think they'll be happy to celebrate white history? Because if it was for white people, there would be no America.
Well, don't they say that, like, every day is, what is it? I forget. There was a saying about this. So when it comes to, you know, history and what it means in America, I think that a lot of academics have said that white history is prevalent in all textbooks anyway. And so by calling out the other backgrounds, then they're trying to heighten our awareness about, I guess I would call it non-white history. But at the end of the day, like when it comes to like white, I guess, I mean, there's so many different backgrounds, even Hispanic, African, whether it's, I don't know what white really means in this kind of context. I just think like, okay, I have lighter skin. I have, people that are in our history as a family, that contributed to America, in the past. I think that's awesome. I don't really think about it as white or not white, but personally, I'm happy and honored to have a family that has contributed. We have on my wife's side of the family, my kids are distant relatives of I think it's Bach in Germany, right? And so I think you and I before we're talking a little bit about the German riff, and so our family has somebody like Bach
But you're
in the
all
lineage
white,
anyway.
though. You're German. You were like 1% white.
German, I guess. Yeah, I don't think about it though,
So what do you mean by you don't know what it means to be white?
Oh, what I mean is when I think about like history and I think about all the different areas where somebody might be white that contributed to America or might have, white skin, I guess I would want to drill down into that a little bit more. But, so our family's from Germanic, right? So we are largely from Germany, some other areas. And so I guess to be honest with you, Jesse, it's not something I really thought a lot about. I think about, helping veterans when it comes to the Department of Veterans Affairs. Sometimes skin color comes into it if we have like an issue of potential racism or something like that, which unfortunately happens still. But for the most part, when it comes to being a veteran, a lot of us, while we do have a skin color, a lot of us, fight for each other because we bleed red, and it's not
Right.
so much because we're white or black or some other color. We in the military, it's this one opportunity that I think Americans have to come from a variety of backgrounds,
Right.
get jammed into the same room together, regardless of your background, color, wealth, status, social, economic stuff. And you all got to work on a team together. And if you don't, there's a bad things happen. So you learn how to put, I think, to the best degree possible, put those types of biases that people have, behind you. And to just focus
Right.
on and function for the mission. And after becoming a veteran and getting out of the military, that's been a big part of what I strive to as a veteran rights advocate and also an attorney, regardless of color, gender, preferences, things like that. If you're somebody that served our country, regardless of your skin color, or other
Right on.
things, I fight for those folks
Well,
regardless. I have clients from all kinds of different backgrounds.
I know, but
And
do you find it odd that if it wasn't for white men, there would be no America? White men discovered and created the greatest country on this side of the planet. And then they made a mistake by allowing all these other people to come in because they've done nothing but try to destroy what they built. Do you find it odd that white people found and create, with the help of God, founded and created the greatest country on the planet, they allow other people to come in and those people try to destroy it rather than build up on it. And yet they won't even show appreciation for what the white men have done for them. Isn't that kind of odd that they would have all these other days but not celebrate, since they're going to do it, right? Instead of American history, isn't it odd that they don't celebrate white history? And if it wasn't for white people, there would be no America.
All right, so that's a lot. That's a big question. So I'll unpack it the best that I can. I think that whether it's odd or not, it's honestly just not something I really think a lot about.
What do you think about the attack upon white people today? In America and around the world, white people, especially in white countries, they are being attacked. They're in genocide because they let all these Allahu Akbar people in. And in Europe, they got a lot of blacks over there from Africa and places. Over here, we have all these foreigners and illegal aliens and white people under attack. They're being raped, robbed, and murdered, and well, no one seemed to care.
I mean,
why is that?
I see what you're saying. So, first of all, I think that attacking anybody based on skin color or creed or anything else is horrific, right? And I think that in our country, you know, again, kind of going back to my service, I mean, we served with people that some of whom were foreign, they were not from America, you know, and ended up as part of their service having an opportunity to become an American citizen, which is one of the best, you know, programs that we've had in our military when it comes to like integration. But the so I think that as far as like the attacks go, like what you're referring to, we've had a lot. I don't know. I mean, in the military, again, I keep coming back to that. I had a lot of people from all kinds of backgrounds, some of whom weren't American, that became Americans through their service. And I think it was a great opportunity, you know, to become kind of, I don't want to say homogenous, but we were able to, you know, bypass a lot of that. I think it's unfortunate and maybe a great call for including or considering at least mandatory military service in a sense to try to help America come together.
Yeah, they need to, if anything, they need to be mandatory, but that all men need to go to the military when they turn 18.
Well, I think a lot of folks, I've heard a lot of good arguments about why that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's not something that I have focused a lot on as far as like studying, but speaking of my own background, my military experience coming from, you know, the middle of Wisconsin, where, you know, we sure didn't have a lot of people that were black or any other race other than white and Native American. And so that was really the two predominant backgrounds. So when I went into the service, you know, we had people from, you know, the ghetto of Philadelphia, from, you know, that one in particular kind of jumps out in my mind.
From and Alabama. Then also
Alabama, yeah. Mississippi, you know, really, yeah. I mean, for me, I had a great time. I mean, we got to see all kinds of different cultures.
So what do you think about the attack on white people in America now in their own country? What do you think about that when you see it and you hear about it and know it's happening? What, as a white man, what goes through your mind that white people are under attack in their own country?
Oh, I think that that would happen. I think that, I mean, it's an interesting question. I think that, you know, people being attacked based on race, you know, I said this before, is bad. You know, I don't like to see it anyway. You know, I used to hate watching movies. There was a great movie with Denzel Washington about Debate Club, I think it was, at least 2 decades ago, that talked about race in the context of South and black men who were working to, you know, further themselves through college and some of the problems that they ran into at that time. And for me, whether the person's white or black or any other color, seeing anybody targeted based on race or creed, I've always found a repulsion toward that. And, you know, what we do see in our country, which, you know, sometimes is race centric, you know, I think is incredibly unfortunate. And if anything, it's a sign that our education system is completely failing to provide its promise to help people understand evidence, facts, logic, right, wrong.
Why do you
how
think white people don't fight back in the right way? I don't mean like fist fight and all that. But why do you think white people, even the white men, are afraid to fight back in the right way in their own country? What is the fear there? Why are they afraid?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it. So first of all, I don't know. But then my second answer is, you know, based on what I've seen some videos where I wouldn't say that the white skinned person is not fighting back in a way that's effective. So I think that sometimes, you know, people defend themselves, and if they're equipped or trained, if they have a military background, like that one gentleman in New York City that had the unfortunate, you know, altercation with the homeless person that was attacking somebody else.
On
you know,
train.
I think that's Yeah, on the train. I mean, there are examples where, if you want to look specifically at race, I wouldn't say that white men are any different than black men when it comes to an ability to learn how to defend yourself and to do so. I've seen some black men that appropriately defend themselves in certain situations too, and in America, you usually have the right to defend yourself, and I think as long as you're, doing it for the right reasons, whether again
But
you're
I
white or
noticed that
black.
white people are afraid, and not all, but most, they're afraid to speak up again when in conversation with the quote unquote minority. They're afraid to say, "I'm not your problem. I don't hate you. You are your own problem." And they white people been blamed by the government, especially black government and now minority government, and they've been blamed for everything. And so generation to generation have been told that. And now they believe they are victim, and they think that white people are holding them back. Why don't white people with a loud voice speak up against that?
Well, and I'll keep coming back to it. When we were in the military, because that's my only real background here. When it comes to these types of topics, black people were promoted. Sometimes, if you were to look at the rate, sometimes they were promoted more often than whites, and sometimes not. It just depended on the situation. But I think that these situations that you're bringing up, these types of kind of hypotheticals, but also observations you're sharing, that the problem I think here is that a lot of these deficits or challenges would be easily addressed if they served in the military and had an opportunity to understand people and get to bleed with other people that are from different backgrounds. And
Amazing.
when you do that, you realize that, there's not as much of a difference between these different cultures as people tend to think when they're tuning into TV and to forms of, maybe you'd call
Right.
it propaganda or some kinds of, programming TV shows that want people to behave a certain way, some kinds of predictive programming. But I think that, again, the military service and other opportunities to serve can help break down those barriers that you're, addressing and help people understand that people are people. And regardless of our skin color or creed or socioeconomic background, I would say, well, if anything, I would say socioeconomic is probably one of the bigger things that doesn't get talked about a lot. But I think military service again is one of the best
And so, are you?
tools our country has to break down these barriers and help people understand that everybody is, we live in a great country where opportunity is around us every day, and you see people that succeed and do amazing things.
Amazing. So, let
The
me just ask:
military is a great tool.
Are you saying that in the military, white people tend to speak up for themselves more so than they would if they were not in the military?
I think the military is, a place where speaking up is encouraged at certain times. But not all the time, I mean, it's there is a rank, and there is, a boss, and there is a commander, and these other roles. What the military does is it allows you an opportunity to not only serve and do great things in your country, but it also teaches you how to be subordinate, how to shut your mouth when you need to do that, right? How to
Right.
be quiet, how to
Yeah.
protect somebody, how to live for somebody else that you don't know, and potentially die for that person that you don't know. Jesse, if I were killed in service, I could have been killed to protect you or somebody else, right?
Right.
So it's an opportunity to be outside of your own body in a way where you're fighting for the protections or for the freedom of people that you don't know from any background. And you're there because you're there. It's a choice that you made. And it's an opportunity to learn to sacrifice for something that's bigger than yourself. And it's the idea of America. And we just celebrated the 250th anniversary of a country that has done, arguably more in the past 1,000 years than has ever really happened, as far as freedoms and as far as a constitution, as far as, being
Yeah.
able to have people come together and, vote or to live
Do you
or
believe
to
that
work and to
racism
have
exists?
property.
Do you believe
What's that?
Do you believe racism exists?
I'm certain it exists. I know it
You
exists,
have
yeah.
proof of it?
Do I have proof of racism?
Yeah.
No, I would say it's just a feeling. Like you know that it happens. You know that, you know, there, you know, the way that I define race, at least, or racism, is where somebody applies a bias against another person without knowing anything about them, based solely on their skin color. So that's what I think of, at least, as racism. And so I know it exists. Do I have proof of it? I don't know that I have proof of it.
Then how do you
I have a
know that
sense that it
this if you don't
exists.
have proof of it?
Well, it's kind of around us. You get a feeling for it, you
What
know?
does racism feel like? What's that feeling? Describe that feeling.
Well, what would it be like?
What
Well, I can put
the?
it in terms that I understand, like, you know, I think that, you know, I'll give you an example. So I was sitting in England and we were walking into a club, and it was a African club, you know. So, and when I say African, I mean like Kenya African,
Right.
right? So black mainly. And so I was in there with a friend, a bunch of friends really, but you know, one of them was a black guy from, I think, Alabama is where he grew up, a big dude. And we were walking through the crowd and I kept getting bumped into, and I was like, man, what the heck's going on here, you know? And I mentioned it to my buddy, because I wasn't used to that, you know. And he's like, man, and Kraus, now you know how I felt growing up. And you know, I think he was from Alabama, and I'm not doing his accent justice here, but you know, he pointed out, he's like, man, that's what it was like where I was growing up in Alabama. People bump into you and you know, do and say certain things. So he brought that to my attention, though, and I was like, oh, you know, you're right. I guess, you know, I just was in it and I didn't know why I kept getting bumped into, and I was like, oh, this is weird. You know, but we were in a black club and it was, you know, African, and that's what my friend from Alabama, you know, pointed out. He's like, that's what it was like growing up where I was.
Is that a sign of racism?
Oh yeah, probably. I don't know.
But it sounds like
Most
hatred.
likely.
It sounds like hatred.
I was the one white guy in the club, or
But
one of three white guys in the club anyway.
it sounds like hatred and not racism.
Oh, I don't know about that.
And they all they're doing it because it sounds like, and based on the information you're given, they were doing it because they hated white people. And when you went in, they treated you that way because they already judged you. They hated you because of your color.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, but I think
I
that.
have to let you know, racism does not exist. That's a made-up lie. It's not true.
Okay.
And I'm
Yeah.
from
Tell me about it.
Alabama. I was raised in
Yeah.
Alabama. I was raised under Jim Crow law.
Okay.
And racism is a made-up word by the people who want to control other people. They made that word up to divide and conquer. I'm about
Sure.
as
Okay.
are you a Christian?
I am a Christian. True.
Does God say I'm about as a spiritual battle, a warfare between good and evil, or does He say it's physical?
Spiritual.
So why do you call it racism instead of call it good or evil?
Well, I guess I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think, you know, something I'll definitely chew on after our talk here. You know, but you know, I was moving in the direction that you were asking as far as the questions go, but I mean, you're probably right in the sense that, you know, God views us as, you know, spiritual beings. If you're a Christian,
Yeah.
you know, he views us as his children, and is not racist at all. While he did create skin, of course, and skin color came out of that, you know, I don't believe that God is racist by any stretch of the imagination, or that that's what God meant
Right.
with some of this, you know.
But why do the children of God call it what the children of Satan call it? Evil people call it racism because they want to divide and conquer and control you for specific power, so-called power and money for themselves. Why do the children of God call it what the children of Satan call it?
Well, when you're in a dialogue with somebody, if you let the other party designate or dictate the terms, right, of the debate, and you start to use those terms, well, then you're using them, right? And so we're all born into people that are born into America are born into America. You know, you were born into Alabama, I was born into Wisconsin. The game at that point was already afoot for both of us, right? And I was not born into Connecticut, let's say, or you know, places that maybe people who attend Yale frequently where they're born, wherever that might be. But you know, I was raised in northern Wisconsin in the middle of the woods, and so my dialogue and my our battlefield, or you can look at it like life as a game, right? The Game of Life book that was written about 100 years ago. You know, the terms are dictated to us, and then frequently we operate within those terms. I mean, part of how I help veterans with self-advocacy, you know, or I call it kind of beyond advocacy, really, which is teaching veterans how to advocate for themselves. But it's how to use those terms, but understand that the terms don't necessarily define you. Those terms are just the tools that are in the tool belt that you can use where appropriate, you know, to get from point A to point B, as long as you do it
I
responsibly.
know,
Now, when
but
it comes.
it's not good for the lost. It's not good for people who don't know God. It's not good when you tell them that it's physical, it's racism rather than it's spiritual. You either love or hate. When I was growing up in Alabama under the Jim Crow laws on a plantation, black people did not call it racism. They said that was good and bad in all people. Some people overcome evil with good, some people don't. And that we should treat each other the way that we would like to be treated, the way God treated us. And that word racism didn't even exist. It was made up by the so-called civil rights movement, Martin Luther King and Jesse Jackson and all those people. And they made that word up so they can divide the races so that they can conquer and get in these positions and power for themselves by making black people think white people hate them because of their color. And it just wasn't true. And if you notice, over the last 70 years, 80 years or so, it's only gotten worse because the word is not real. And it makes people angry. It makes you believe a lie. And unless the children of God speak the truth about it, it's not going to get better. It's just going to get worse. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the more people that know about God, the better, right? And I
I
mean the
know, but
true
the
living God,
children of
I don't
God
mean.
calling it what the children of Satan calls it.
Well, I mean, so when I was using it with you here and you're asking me about it, that's you had set up, you know, as the show host, like you set up the parameter. And so I was like operating in it. But I think that you're right that like anything, I don't know the etymology of, you know, the term racism. You know, it's not something I'm familiar with.
It's just a word.
Well, true, right? But on the other hand, you know, you do. So you asked me about racism. Let's pull it back a little bit, and then you know, a feeling, right? And you would ask me like,
Oh,
well, how do you
yeah.
know? You
What's the feeling, Benjamin?
feeling, right?
Yeah.
And all I can say, and again, you know, this is me, some German kid that grew up in Wisconsin, right? Who had, you know, some experiences like what I just described in England, but you know, I would say the feeling is a, in that instance, you know, you got the impression that these guys wanted you to know that they're the boss. You're not the boss. And you know, that bump and shove is positioning, you know, to make sure that you know that you're not in the right place. You
Right.
know, I'm just,
Yeah.
that's kind of my thought, you know? So whether you call it racism or not, I don't know, but
It's
yeah,
not
that was definitely
racism, Benjamin.
my feeling. My feeling was, hey, you don't belong here. Dude, is what they were saying to me
Yeah.
through their actions,
Yeah.
right? And then making sure that I knew that I needed to be careful. That's
Amazing.
basically, don't step out of line, you know?
Right.
That was kind of my impression. But I think that you're right, the as far as this idea of God and that God isn't, you know, racist
No,
at all.
he's all
God
love
loves all
all the
people.
time.
Yeah, I agree.
And if we are children of God, we should be of love too. So, and if you have love, which is the nature of God, you can't lie tell lies about life with the children of Satan. You know, and you don't have to do it if you don't want to do it. You don't have to follow them. They should be following you, if anything. Otherwise, we were never going to come together as a people on earth as long as the children of God agree with the children of Satan. Hi, I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. 2026 marks 250 years of America, and they have put my face on this beautiful silver coin to commemorate this occasion. That's amazing. Call 800-411-2663. That's 800-411-BOND. Grab yours now before they are gone.
And going back to the point that I've been making before about the military and, you know, the military advantage, it's a one opportunity, especially for people that don't come from means. You know, I did not come from a family of what I would call means, you know. My dad is a retired trucker, and my mom worked in her own small business, and we scratched by to, you know, make right. ends meet for most of our childhood. And yeah. so, you know, like, we didn't have a whole lot. I didn't know that I didn't have a whole lot. I right. thought it was fine. I never thought about it until much later in life. And then, you know, realized when I got out of there and I went to, for example, when I went to Northwestern University, and I started to see people with means from all kinds of different backgrounds, skin colors and everything, you know, everybody's parents had a private jet except mine, you know, whether they were black or brown or white, you know, they were all very affluent folks.
Yeah.
And I had never seen that before. And so then seeing what affluence is, and you know, what that means in Chicago, I was even in the military, I hadn't seen anything quite like that. And so, it was a great experience again, you know, a little bit different than the military, to say the least. But, you know, going back to my point on the military service, though, it is an opportunity that people can be, you know, serve with each other regardless of skin color. And it does, in my opinion, blow past a lot of biases, and whether you want to call it racism yeah. or whatever, you know, it's an opportunity for people to serve and to come to faith, you know, which is one of the things that it helped also for me to help distill was, you know, my belief in God and a higher power, what that means for Christ or Yeshua, whatever, yeah. you know, you want to call Jesus. You know, that was my formative years was in the military, not in college.
I didn't know I was cool either. I grew up on a plantation in a wood house, you know, like, and it only had two rooms, a living room and one bedroom and a kitchen.
Okay.
And then the bathroom was outdoors, you know, the outhouse things.
And we had an outhouse.
And,
yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And I did not know I was poor until I moved to the city. And I heard the so-called civil rights people telling us, as a young person, I was 18 when I moved to the city. They were telling us that we were poor. I'm like, I never knew I was poor. I never went hungry. I was happy living in that two-room home, going out there and using that outside toilet. I never knew I was poor because I had love for my family. My family was there. My father, grandfather, everybody was there. And we were fed. We had to work. We earned our way. And they lied to me when I moved to the city. Once again, saying that we were poor, that the white man was on his back. We didn't even have an idea about that at all. They lied to us, Benjamin. But Benjamin, let me ask, when you have a wound, you're in the Air Force, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you have a wound in the military while you're in the Air Force?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm a disabled veteran, and I had to fight with the agency to get my benefits. You know, it's a long story for a different day, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, you know, I ended up having a 10-year fight with the agency to get the benefits that I should have received earlier on. And that's part of what helped me to develop into building a veteran rights law firm and helping people, you know, try to get freedom, become leaders in society.
Right.
You know, people sometimes think that just because you get disability benefits, somehow that means it's game over, which is not true. And so we help veterans, again, from all walks of life, Christian, not Christian, you know, black, white, brown, gay, not gay, whatever. I help veterans become leaders in America because I think that's what God put me here to do. And I help veterans become doctors and lawyers, and that's the thing that I'm the most passionate about. We work against the Department of Veterans Affairs, and sometimes we work with them, depending on what they want to do. I look at it like I'm pro-veteran. Sometimes the federal Department of Veterans Affairs labels me as anti-VA, but I don't think of it that way. I'm pro-veteran, and anyone that supports veterans becoming leaders in America, which I think we need more of, I'm on board. Same team,
Amazing. Let me,
I don't know if that really answers your
yeah, you
question,
did.
but
Let me ask, you a Christian,
absolutely.
did God create women to lead or to follow?
Well, the New Testament talks about that, and the Old Testament talks about God creating, man and woman, and then New Testament has certain roles about it within the dominion of family. But I think that the Bible all has examples of women in helper or subservient roles as well as in leadership roles. I know
So,
if you
but
look
my
at
question
Deborah
is,
in the
did
Old
God
Testament.
create women to lead or to follow?
Well, I don't know that I look at it that way. I think that women are in the book of Genesis were created to be helpers in that context. And so I don't know the term, but it's not I don't know that I would use the word follower.
And why not?
Well, because oh gosh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
It was right on the tip of my tongue, and I forgot to say.
Well, God says that he created woman, and woman was to be his helper. But
Meaning
I
like
don't
helping
think
with the
that.
children at the house, cook, clean, watch over his kids while he's at work,
Well, I
and
think
stay
it's a
pregnant and
bigger than.
back in the kitchen.
Well, I think it's bigger than that. The, but each person, it depends on your family unit and what you're, striving to do,
But I'm
but.
still trying to find out, as a Christian, did God create women to lead or to follow?
I don't know if follow is the right word,
Why
frankly,
not?
but I think, well, when I think a helper, so like let me use an example. So my wife is my helper, my confidant. When I have questions, today or whatever going on, I talk to her and she gives me input that I know is not going to be biased or self-serving, but she's going to tell me what she really thinks because I need her to. And I, in my law practice, for example, she helps me with operations, and so she steers things, in our company that are, I wouldn't call it follower. Now, is she technically subordinate in like a hierarchical perspective? Where I run the company as the attorney? Well, yes. But do I rely on her to be a leader? Yeah, I rely on her to lead my kids all the time,
But if you're relying on her to lead your children, who is she relying on if you're relying on her?
Well, then she has her own let me back up a little bit. So in our setting, in our
Amazing.
home,
Does
and
she
us just
obey
be
you?
Does your wife obey you? I think I don't know, but she will. In our situation, my wife and my children are homeschooled, and so my wife makes an extraordinary amount of decisions every day that I can't help with. There's no way that I could do what I do, in the company, but also at the home front, and to do it both well. And so she is in that context, she is leader of the home. I think in our church, we talk about, there. I guess I would liken it to a ship captain, right? So you have a ship and the ship has one captain, not two. Somebody's got to make the decision about the wheel and certain things. But there are so many other roles that are important within that context that I wouldn't call it just follower. I mean, my wife certainly isn't.
Does he obey you?
So she'll sometimes do what I ask if it makes sense. And
I know, but does he obey
we're
you?
a you're getting me here, Jesse.
Yeah.
Let's just say let me word this story. So you were kind of hitting me with the racism word earlier, and so you're using terms that I don't usually use.
Why
So
not?
because I just don't. I don't know. I mean, if I in our home, we view it as an op. Like I kind of set the tempo, what I think makes sense. For us, we kind of have to do it that way because I'm running a company and I'm helping a lot of veterans do things. And so she, will manage the home and the children and the schedules around the needs of the company and what I think should happen. But on the other hand, she has for many years teaches artistic dance in the community
I
and
know, but
does
what I'm
that as
trying
her
to
own
find
thing.
out, does he obey you?
She'll sometimes do things that I ask and then sometimes not. Let's put it that way.
And so,
But
are you
I
saying
don't
sometimes he obeys you, sometimes he doesn't?
I mean, I don't know if I would word it that way. I guess you got me. I'm not sure that I'm going to use that word. I'll let you use that word. But
How
I,
do you deal with the hell in her when it comes out? When that hell comes out of her, how do you deal with that?
usually, if we're fighting, or there's some kind of challenge. My normal response is to kind of get quiet and think about it for a little bit, frankly. But it's not always true. We pray a lot. So one of the things that we've been doing more lately is we try to pray in the morning, and try to pray at night. We'd also, if we can, we try to pray in the middle of the day. My kids also pray.
Do you
So
protect
if
your children from her so that she doesn't pass that hell on to them?
I wouldn't call it that, to be honest with you, but the
Do you protect your children from her?
when we're having challenges, I think that it's fair to say, if I am upset about something, she'll, intervene and give me enough space to cool off. And but like any marriage, nothing is perfect, but we pray a lot, Jesse, and we rely on God to guide our marriage. It's not perfect, and there certainly are challenges, but we pray a lot. We get into the Word. We look at 2 Peter, 1 Peter when it comes to relationships between a man and woman, and our church really believes that. So we refer to Jesus as Yeshua. And God is Yahweh, so some of the older terms. But we follow what we believe the Bible sets out for us. Our church is emphatic about the importance of the woman's role in the home as the leader of, manager leader of the home itself. And, when I'm gone, somebody's got to make those decisions. And so, but as far as your question about, when we're having challenges, I mean, we pray a lot. We fall short of
But I know, but
God's intent a lot, but
as soon as the prayer is over, she's yelling at you again or at the children.
no, that's not usually how it is here. But again, all I can say is, we come together as often as possible, and we focus on honoring God as much as we can remember, which is not perfect. You know, I think the Hebrews
Let me
and
ask
the
you this
Jews.
Because of time, do you believe that men should play in women's sports?
No, I think that men should play in men's sports and women should play in women's sports.
So,
and I tend to agree with Clarence Thomas's characterization
yeah.
of that related to sports. I know because I've seen how men can operate because of our level of strength. And I've seen some young girls severely injured
Yeah.
in certain sports. And I just find it sad that that happens.
So I agree
And
with you that men should not play in women's sport and women should not play in men's sport. Do you agree with the order of God and Christ, Christ and man over woman, women over children? Do you agree with God in that order?
So, yes. So we our church, and me personally, I believe in what, you know, the Bible says.
That the
that
man is over
plain.
The woman as Christ is over the man, right?
Well, I love my wife, right, as Christ loved the church.
I know, but
and
let's
so,
do the first thing first. You agree with that the man is over the woman as Christ is over the man. Am I right? You agree with that, right?
Yeah, that's in Colossians,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Somewhere. Do you agree with that?
It's in one of the C books, right?
Yeah.
It's Corinthians or Colossians. You know, I know it's in there.
Do you
I read
agree
it,
with that?
It was part of our vows, you know? So that's,
do
we,
you agree
we,
with
well, it's in the Bible. So I do agree with it in the sense that it's there. And we
so would
try
you
to
ever
follow
a woman?
Would I ever follow a woman, period?
Yes.
I mean, I have, you know, and it's in the military, man. Like, I keep kind of coming back to that point. You know, if your boss in the military is a woman, she's your boss, right? And you're going to do what she says.
What a mess, huh?
I mean, I'm not real. I don't know. It depends. You know, I think my face is probably turning red here, but the...
Why is your face turning red?
I mean, at the end of the day, we could look at this, and there are examples. I didn't know we were going to talk about the Bible and women's leadership. So this is not something that was kind of top of mind when we got here. But, you know, if you look at Deborah was a leader, right?
No.
Of the Israelites.
She was under the instruction of her husband, though.
Well, but she ended up becoming a judge, right? So she was a judge for a time when there were no male
leaders.
But
she wasn't a leader. She was being guided by a man. She wasn't a leader.
But she was a judge, though.
But let me ask. So you said you would follow a woman.
I have followed women. I mean, I had to.
So, but you do agree with me that women were created to follow and not to lead, right? It's not in their nature naturally to be leaders because it wasn't, they were not created that way by God. You do agree with that, right?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'm comfortable, you know, kind of getting into that topic here, but I think that, you know,
why
there
not?
Is, well, I mean, that's not really what I do. I'm usually helping vets get benefits, you know, and fighting against the U.S. government. You
so
know
let me
I
ask
mean?
One other question because I do have some other stuff I want to ask you about. knowing that women were created to follow and not to lead, why would the military allow women to become part of the military, become military people, knowing that it's not in their nature to lead but to follow? Why would they weaken the military by putting women in the military?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think that women have maintained necessary roles in the military historically.
They used to be like nurses or to answer the phone. That's fine.
Well, that's where it started. But I think
right, but
there
they
have
put
been,
them out on the battlefield, and the military is now weaker because the men have to weaken themselves in order to make the woman feel like she's a leader. They give up their strength and let her pretend she's strong, and it only have hurt the military like it does with sports or anything that you put the woman as a, even in a home, when the woman is leading the home is screwed up. Why would the military weaken itself by not just letting them be nurses and things like that, rather than going out on the battlefield? Knowing that it's not the way it should be, and not in her nature.
That would be something that's kind of beyond my pay grade, but I could tell you that, I mean, the brass tacks of it are that, I served under some incredible women that were smart and capable leaders. You know, I remember meeting with General Hickey, who was the head of Veteran Benefits Administration back in 2013, I think it was. And, you know, she referred to me at that time as one of the big brains in VA, you know, issues. And they wanted to invite people that are kind of outside of the box to help the agency solve problems. And I always viewed her as somebody who could collect people, who was a good, she had an interesting way of how she would explain issues and solutions. And had a way about her when it came to, I mean, she was, I think, one of the first female fighter pilots,
if I'm not mistaken. Oh, what a mess.
Well, she was smart, you know? I don't know. I can't speak to her piloting abilities, but she became, I want to say it was a two-star general, maybe. I can't remember her final rank.
Because of time, have you noticed that? And then I got some other stuff I want to add because of time. Have you noticed that? Anytime you put the woman as a leader, everything get worse and get weaker. It doesn't get better. Look at our country. They are putting women in leadership role everywhere, and things are only getting worse. They're not getting better because women are illogical and emotions, and all their decisions are based on how they feel, not what's logical and what is right. Because it's
Well, women, you've been hanging around, Jesse, but I know a lot of women that are logical.
You can't find one logical. You can look up and down the earth, and you will not find one logical woman.
No, I don't know that I agree there. I think, you know, I've been, blessed by, you know, maybe being around people that are, you know, capable, whether you're a man or woman. But I think that. Again, you know, you go into the military and you keep using them to keep beating that drum. You know, when you go in there, a lot of times, you know, the people that are the best for the job rise to the top and you,
but they have to weaken themselves so that they can pretend like the woman is rising to the top. It's a pretense. Like when a man wear a dress and call himself a transgender, you have to pretend it's a woman, but you know, is a male, and they do the same thing with women too. They pretend that women are strong when we all know that they are not. How is that helping a woman to pretend she's strong rather than showing her how to return to her natural state of being?
Well, I don't know that I agree with you. I think that women are, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, sure, some are, you know, maybe more emotional. I've met some men that are emotional too.
They're just like an emotional man is just like his mama. He's a woman.
I don't know. All I can tell you is
it's not normal for men to be emotional. They become like what they hate. They become just like what their mom. They just become like their mama.
Well,
men are not naturally emotional.
Well, women. The women I've been around, right? I mean, we've been around. So you've been asking a lot of my observations, right? So we're kind of steering away from what I do. And so these are topics that I don't usually interface with on a regular basis. But I'll tell you, I mean, I help women become doctors. I help women become lawyers, right? I help men become doctors and lawyers, you know, and things like that. So I don't know that it's, if I've learned anything over, you know, my past years as an advocate is that, you know, I don't like to judge a book by the cover, right? Which is a tip, you know, a very common saying. And I've seen a lot of people that, you know, yeah, can you judge a book by the cover? Well, sometimes, but not all the time. And because I'm an attorney, I have to make sure that I'm looking at it from a objective perspective. And I know that I can't judge a book by the cover because it increased the risk that I'm wrong. So I try not to do it, right? And we as attorneys are trained in, like, every year or every couple of years anyway, I have to take classes on bias and understanding how it affects, you know, the administration of law, healthcare, things like that. So I see it a lot, but I definitely, I don't often fall into the trap of generalizations, you know, or superlatives, you know, always or never.
Let me ask you one other thing about fathering a woman. Christ said, God said to the man, because you follow the woman, you listen to the woman, you will suffer. Have you noticed that every time the man listened to the woman, including his mama, his wife, his girlfriend, or any woman, have you noticed he suffers every time he listens to the woman?
No, I don't agree.
What do you mean? You know, and was God lying about that?
No, I don't think that's an example of a text that was written, right, thousands of years ago. And
so God was lying thousands of years ago about it?
Well, I don't know. I think that we're kind of going off on a tangent here a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, what VA has taught me in the military as well is to trust but verify.
Right.
And so very often we as a country will run into bureaucracies, especially federal level bureaucracies, but also local level, where, you know, the things that they're telling you to believe are not actually true. And you have to peel back the file. You have to really look at what the case law says or what the regulation says. And oftentimes what we see are people who are probably, you know, many of which are well-intended, who are looking at, you know, they're looking at life through their own lens, which may or may not be accurate. So I see that often. And, you know, that's why veterans hire me to do what I do, right? Because somebody within a federal agency looked at their situation and they didn't necessarily apply the law the right way. And they instead allowed their bias, whatever it is, to, you know, have problems. You know, some of the things that we see at the VA, just, you know, going back to the concept of race that you were talking about, is that we still do see some racial-based bias within the federal government when they're adjudicating cases. And so this is just, you'd ask me of an example of race or racism. And, you know, without getting into particulars that I can't ethically share, what I can tell you is that you do see bias within the federal government. You do see its application. Sometimes I get the sense that it's more about race than about other things. Sometimes I see it about gender, where I feel like the person that's talking to me maybe has an adverse view to my client who might be a woman wanting to be a doctor or wanting to be some other thing, right? And so I key in on this, you know, just because of my experience and my background, and we do, you know, hopefully win those cases. But what my experience against the VA taught me, it taught me about power, is to always check it, right? And to push back. There's an appropriate way to push back. You know, here in Department of Veterans Affairs, we have appeals, right? That's the appropriate way to push back. If you don't like the outcome, talk to your congressional, you know, liaison or your U.S. representative or senator about the problems that you're seeing.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and where my focus is supposed to be race-less. It is supposed to be gender or sex-less, right? It's supposed to treat all veterans the same. Whether you're a man or a woman,
because you're a lawyer, you're absolutely right. But let me ask, then I got to put you on the hot seat. I think it's awful that these men go to the military and they sacrifice their whole, they're just giving up their lives. And some of them are wounded, you know, arms cut off and things like that. And then when they do, if they do make it back home, they have to worry about getting the proper type of medical care they need, or living quarters. I would think if I was president, I would put the military first over everything, over these people having out of wedlock babies and illegal coming in, free education and everything. I would make sure the veterans are taken care of first before I would with people who have not put their lives on the line like that. Did that make sense? Veterans shouldn't have to worry about anything.
And that's true with, you know, Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt said that a man willing to shed his blood for the country deserves a square deal after.
Yes.
You know, that was over 100 years ago. I think it's true today. I think it was true 200 years ago. Do we live in a country that always honors its promises to its soldiers? Absolutely not. That has been true for time and time again. When it comes time to balance the budget, they'll usually look at veterans to balance it on our backs, right? Yeah. Or groups like that. We see that in our country. We've seen it over and over again. You had the Bonus Army March in the 30s when the country basically reneged on the agreement, and they would not, instead of negotiating what they had before, they decided, oh, we're not going to do it that way. We're not going to give you what we promised. And a bunch of homeless or destitute veterans ended up in Washington, D.C. They ended up turning the government's military loose against these same veterans. It was a mess. We've continuously seen in our country time and again that during good times, we all bleed red, white, and blue, and we support our troops. But in hard times, we do also see that they're going to cut corners, and if they're going to do it, it often is going to be on the back of vets. And
well,
so we see both sides of that.
I'm glad you're out there fighting for them. I need you to put on the hot seat, so I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
All right.
You ready?
I'll do my best.
The hot seat.
Have you ever picked cotton?
Yes, but not for money.
Should white people be allowed to use the N-word?
I don't think anyone should use the word N-word. How about that?
What is a man?
A man is a person born with a penis.
Did you take the jab?
No.
I'm sorry?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Is the earth flat or round?
Round.
Are UFOs real?
Maybe.
I'm sorry?
Maybe.
Maybe. True or false? True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
False. That's not true.
Does a chicken have lips?
I have chickens, and I don't recall them having lips.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
No.
Do we need more white babies?
We need more babies.
How about white babies?
White and black and brown.
Do we need more white babies?
I mean, we need more babies. I don't know. That's my answer.
Do you love white people?
Absolutely.
Is it great? True or false? Sending your child.
And by the way, my wife is white, and I love her. Therefore, equals I love white people.
Hallelujah. True or false? Sending your child to a public school is child abuse.
My children don't go to government schools.
Right on. Is that child abuse to send their children, for someone to send their children to a public school?
I don't think so.
Did you have fun?
I had fun. This was not what I expected, Jesse. You caught me off guard. I didn't think that these were not the questions I anticipated. Let's put it that way. So you made my brain think more than I was anticipating.
Right on. Tell the folks how to get your YouTube channel, your books, or whatever it is you're promoting.
Yeah. So anyone wanting to learn about veterans and our experience can go to disabledveterans.org. That's where we publish regularly about issues that veterans are facing and provide free and low-cost resources. There's also Benjamin Krause on YouTube. That's where we have the Veteran Rights Podcast, and I talk about issues the veterans are experiencing, and also congressional clips and anything that I think is going to help move the needle when it comes to disabled veterans and our needs here in the country.
I counseled a lot of veterans over the years I've been doing it, and I'm glad to hear that you're working with them, because the way they are treated after, especially all the hell they've gone through, sacrificing themselves for us, and the way they are treated is pure evil when they come back home. They should not have to worry about this stuff at all, especially when they come back, because they have gone out and earned that by putting their lives on the line. So I'm really happy to have you on, and I'm glad to know that you're out there doing what you're doing.
Yeah, appreciate your time, Jesse. Again, it was a lot of interesting questions I didn't have. I've never had an opportunity to talk about. So it was an interesting time here.
Right on. Same here. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget, you can support the Fallen State by becoming a member on the YouTube channel or locals.com, and check out our merch and the coffee, jessileepeterson.shop. And if you'd like to see other guests on, contact my producer@thefallenstate.tv. producer@thefallenstate.tv. And also, I do shout outs for you. Shout outs. Go to cameo.com. Personal shout out. Birthdays, wedding, congratulations, whatever it is. cameo.com/Jesse Lee Peterson or shout out dot. What? Fans. He black. shoutout.fans/Jesse Lee Peterson, all right? And thank you all for your support. I absolutely appreciate it. Benjamin, that was amazing. Thank you.
You have a good remainder of the week, all right? Stay cool.
I will. Happy White History Month.
Thanks.